Senate will come to order. Just wait for a second. Senator Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. President. Could I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
I have two very special guests here today that I'd like to introduce to you. These fine people got involved with the political process in a kind of a tough way. This is Ed and Lois Smart, the parents of Elizabeth Smart. And they are here to talk with a number of us and join our deliberations for, they said, a couple of hours. But would you please welcome to the Senate Ed and Lois Smart.
Welcome to the Senate, and welcome to Wyoming. Senator Anderson, 28, you, coat. Put your coat on. messages from the House.
January the 23rd, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 6, Mr. President. This is to inform you that the House of Representatives, 62nd Wyoming State Legislature, has sworn in and elected the permanent officers as follow. Representative Rosie Berger, Speaker Pro Tem, Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. January the 23rd, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Third reading passed, Mr. President. The bills listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 153, Representation of Children in Compact Proceedings, ayes 60. House Bill number 154, Representation of Children in Chin Proceedings, ayes 60. House Bill number 170, Streamlined Sales of Tax Direct Mail, ayes 51, noes 9. House Bill number 171, Fuel Tax Gasoline Definition, ayes 58, noes 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. January the 23rd, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Third reading passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 35, Search and Rescue Operations, ayes 60. House Bill number 78, Budget Review Process, ayes 57, noes 3. House Bill number 122, Alcoholic Beverages Purchases Acceptable Identification, ayes 60. House Bill number 139, Uniform Trust Code, ayes 60. House Bill number 31, Printing of State Directory and Constitution, ayes 46, noes 14. House Bill number 76, Investigative Subpoenas, ayes 40, noes 20. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Introduction, reading, and reference of bills. Oops. Senate File 163. First reading of the Senate file.
House Bill 163, Senior Citizen Service Directs. Oh, I was reading all those House files. Senate File 163, Senior Citizen Service Districts Mill Levy Continuation, sponsored by Senator Dockstader, an act relating to special districts.
Senate File 163 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Senate File 160, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 160, Pesticides, sponsored by Senator Geis, and Act relating to pesticides.
Senate File 160 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 161, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 161, State Land Access Permits, sponsored by Senator Driscoll, and Act relating to state land.
Senate File 161 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 162, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 162, Authorized Taking of an Eagle, sponsored by Senator Kraft, an act relating to the taking of wildlife.
Senate File 162 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. Senate File 158, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 158, Front License Plates, sponsored by Senator Kraft, and act relating to license plates.
Senate File 158 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House bills on first reading. House Bill 111, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 111, Tips and Gratuities Sales Tax, sponsored by Representative Petrov, an act relating to taxation. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 111 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 112, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 112, Tip Distribution Policies, sponsored by Representative Petrov, and Act relating to labor and employment. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 42, no 17, excused 1.
House Bill 112 is referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. House Bill 170, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 170, Streamline Sales Tax Direct Mail, sponsored by Representative Madden, an act relating to sales tax. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 51, noes 9.
House Bill 170 is referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. House Bill 171, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 171, Fuel Tax Gasoline Definition, sponsored by Representative Madden, an act relating to taxation. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 58, noes 2.
House Bill 171 is referred to Committee number 3, Revenue. House Bill 160, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 160, Vehicle Sales and Use Tax, sponsored by Representative Ken Escobel, an act relating to vehicle sales and use tax. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 42, no 17, excused 1.
House Bill 160 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 116, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 116, Select Federal Natural Resource Management Committee, sponsored by Representative Lockhart, and Act relating to public lands. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 116 is referred to Committee number 9, Minerals. House Bill 52, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 52, Workplace Safety Initiatives, sponsored by Representative Lubnow, an act relating to workplace safety. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 52 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 6, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 6, Solid Waste Disposal District Board Terms, sponsored by Representative Gingery, an act relating to solid waste disposal districts. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 6 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 59, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 59, Banking Act Amendments, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to banking and finance. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 59 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 60, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 60, Money Transmitters Act Amendments, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to trade and commerce. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1.
House Bill 60 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. House Bill 64, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 64, Data Center Co-location Tax Exemption, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to economic development. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 55, noes 4, excused 1.
House Bill 64 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Reports from standing committees.
January the 23rd, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 77, Community College Construction, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins, Senator Bebout, Chairman. January the 23rd, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 127, Lien Notice, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Burns excused, Senator Schiffer chairman. January the 23rd, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 124, Frivolous Liens, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, excused, Senator Burns, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. January the 23rd, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 117, Confidentiality of Domestic Abuse Victim Information, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, excuse Senator Burns, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's adopted. Who was it? Hicks. Senator Hicks.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 89. The reading clerk will read in the bill. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'll have that read at this time.
Senate File 89, Veterinarian Technician, sponsored by Senator Emmerich, and Act Relating to Veterinarians. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senator Emmerich, Geisen, Hicks. No, Senator Johnson. Excuse, Senator Driscoll. Senator Geist, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? If I can call on Senator Geist for an explanation of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate File 89 do pass, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Emmerich to explain the bill.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that that be read in at this time, please.
Senate File 89, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Thank you. I would like to move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 89, and I will, if it's agreed upon, I will then be able to go through the bill and insert that at the appropriate times, Mr. Chairman. This bill is to set up a structure for veterinary technicians. There is no structure or oversight in the state of Wyoming. 34 other states do continue to, or will, have oversight on veterinary technicians. And as we go through, we are creating two new paragraphs. And pretty much everything is boilerplate, almost exact, out of the 33-300 section of our statutes, only they're using technicians. But any veterinarian licensed to practice, on page 2, any veterinarian licensed to practice veterinary medicine in the state of Wyoming may use the services of technicians. They cannot practice as technicians unless they're supervised or hired by a licensed veterinarian. Then we come to requirements for certificates. The board, referring to the Board of Veterinary Medicine, may issue certificates as prescribed by rules. And then more boilerplate, has reached the age of majority, no felony or misdemeanors. And we wanted to keep this felony misdemeanor moral turpitude, all of that in, because there is a certain amount of exposure to dangerous drugs, and we wish the want to keep that as simple as possible. I bring to you on page 3 part of a problem that we thought we had until we kind of wordsmithed it. The applicant has successfully completed an accredited program in veterinary technology as approved by the board, or has other training and experience which the board will determine to be adequate. What we're trying to do in that paragraph is to take care of these individuals who have been a veterinary technician for perhaps 20 years and have never received an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree. We want to be able to allow them to participate in the structure, and the board will have to examine them, I'm sure, or have testimony as to their competency. We come down to supervision and the fact that they must be employed or supervised by a veterinarian. They cannot work independently. We come to reciprocity, where our states and other states will be able to exchange if they have similar or equal requirements. The board has the ability to implement the rules of this. We're defining them on page 5. It means a veterinary technician means a person who is registered by the Board of Veterinary Medicine. And then down into penalties. Mr. Chairman, I would then like to explain the amendment once we've voted on it, please.
Are you calling for question on the amendment, Senator?
I am.
All those in favor of Senator Emmerich's motion to adopt the standing committee at number 1 to Senate file 89, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 1, line 3, we're going to insert the term state certification because there is a number of terminologies used across the country as to how these are certified or documented, and so we're going to use the word board or state certified. Also on line, or page 1, line 15, the same thing. Page 2, line 6, we are deleting employed and inserting supervised, because there are several cases across the state where the veterinarian may oversee the technicians, but they are hired by another entity, such as shelters and things of that sort. Page 5, line 6, delete registered and insert certified by the Wyoming Board of Veterinary Medicine. There was a fiscal note included in here. There is no general fund appropriation, and we're essentially taking this and placing it in block with the Board of Veterinary Medicine. The technicians have been asking for the last 2 or 3 years to be licensed and supervised and have a structure within the state of Wyoming. We felt that this would be a good place to put them, with the Board of Veterinary Medicine agreeing to take over that responsibility. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman, and I'll respond to any questions you may have.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like a little better explanation of why we need this bill. And I'm not even sure what a vet tech is. I mean, I know one when I see one, I guess. Does this go to a person who has been trained, for example, to float horses' teeth? That's all they do. They've gone to school for it. Then are they a vet tech? And do they have to hire out to a veterinarian? My first point, I'm not sure that the definition in here, saying a vet tech is a vet tech that's certified, really doesn't define what the scope of practice is. Second point, if the qualification is to be hired or to be basically hired by a veterinarian, why don't we let the veterinarian decide who they want to employ? I'm not sure what the role of the state is in this. It concerns me, and in particular, I use a veterinarian. But this means, and my veterinarian has a vet tech. But now the vet has to get the vet tech registered and board certified and tattooed but certified. All it does is drive my costs up, because she's going to pass that cost on to me. That's the way it works. And I will have the same vet tech that I've had for the last 2 years doing the same things, except somewhere there'll be a databank with the vet tech's name on it, I guess, and saying that she's certified. What do I get as an industry person with this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I suppose we could honestly say, what good is the bill? Well, I think there's a little more to the bill than that. This is defining the scope of practice of veterinary technicians, but it does not really do anything about the ability of a veterinarian to hire an individual to be a technician. The Technicians Association, which we have one in the state of Wyoming, wants to be recognized. Perhaps it's ego. Perhaps it's control. I'm not so sure. But the veterinarian can employ anyone he wishes to, certified or not certified, makes no difference. But this provides a venue for reciprocity, as well as a structure for these individuals to be under, to be supervised by the Board of Veterinary Medicine. I quite honestly don't see how it will drive up costs. This is an individual decision by these technicians of whether they wish to be certified or whether they don't. There is no requirement that they must be certified. That's something that they can choose or not choose. Because I don't see how it will drive up costs, Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no further questions, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 89, say yea.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
We'll call for division. The chair is unsure. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right. You guys wanted to
say.
Those opposed? Senate File 89 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 63. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'll have it read in at this time.
Senate File Number 63, School District Special Reserve Funds, sponsored by Senator Cole, and Act Relating to School Districts. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, O2, Senators Cole and Rothfuss. No, Senators Barnard and Landon, Senator Cole, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Cole, if you could explain the bill?
Committee of the Whole rising report, it do so with the do pass recommendation on Senate File 63, and I would move the standing committee amendment as well that's just been read in. In explanation of what we're doing here, we're going to reinvigorate a discussion we had a couple days ago with a bill that moved out of this body, but this is more formal than what the amendments were on that. Just a little background. Senate File 63 repeals provisions allowing for school districts to establish special reserve funds and capital improvement reserve funds over and above the state foundation program funding and capital construction major maintenance funding. Their proposal was drafted in response to a survey of school districts on the use of special reserves per directive of the Joint Education Committee, which found that over half of the districts responding to the survey have created special reserve funds in which they have transferred general funds and have used these funds to purchase or replace equipment and funded school building repairs over $80 million since 2004-05. So the rationale behind the bill is to separate operational funds from capital construction funds, and to ensure that the legislature maintains equitable funding among all school districts as required by the courts. The proposal in the bill phases this in over 2 years. You'll see in a standing committee amendment that we come back and change that. Now to have a discussion on the bill. I think we have to go back to court cases. Clearly, the Supreme Court in their findings said that we'll provide a common basket of educational goods and services. We'll provide equal opportunity no matter where the kid is, Sundance, Jackson, or Cheyenne. And in the prototypical funding model, it'll be cost-based. So the intent of what the Supreme Court told us, operating funds that are paid out to districts are there to operate the district, not to slop over into a special reserve fund. That's going to be the discussion we will probably have. That'll be the discussion we had a couple days ago. I draw your attention to the handout that we distributed. And as we walk through that handout, you'll see that there's really five districts out there that have over 81% of the general fund money in their special reserve funds. The number one district with the most is Laramie 1 right here. Sublette has $13 million. If you go over to page 2, you'll see that Sublette County District number 9 has $5 million. And Campbell County 1 about $19.4 million. And I'm sure we'll hear from those good people from those from their favorite districts. I think it's interesting that you move through this thing and see where the funds are. I'm not going to try to cover much of it. I'm going to say the total out there, if you go to page, actually the third page, it's about $80.1 million. And I will say that of the 42 respondents, 23 school districts, out of the 42 that responded, we had six that did not respond, had these special reserve funds. So I encourage you to go through this. I'm sure we'll have a discussion.
Senator Coe. Could I have the standing committee amendment read in at this point?
Yeah, I thought we did, Mr. Chairman.
No, we have not read the amendment in.
Okay. If you would, please. Mr. Chairman.
Standing committee amendment number, Senate file 63, standing committee amendment number 1.
Senator Coe, would you like to move that standing committee amendment?
Move that standing committee amendment.
Thank you. Again.
Mr. Chairman, the standing committee amendment does about two or three things. If you look on the first page of it, starting on line 26, it says the board may deposit funds of the district into the reserve fund except for any amounts received by the district from the foundation program account. This says basically that foundation program monies shouldn't go in to the special reserve fund. If you go down to the bottom down here, line 41 of the amendment, balance within a special reserve fund created under Wyoming Statute 2113-504 and existing prior to the effective date of this act. So that's where we take the 2015 extension off. In other words, they can keep those monies and expend them as they so choose. There's not a 2015 deadline to be out of these special reserve funds. If you go over to the next page of the amendment, Section 3, the Joint Appropriations Interim Committee shall conduct a study on expenditures of special reserve funds by school districts and report back to the 2014 legislature. And the last part of the Standing Committee Amendment, we delete July 1st, 2013 and make it immediately. I'd ask that you support the Standing Committee Amendment, and then we'll talk about the bill more.
All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 63, say aye.
Aye.
There we are. That amendment is passed. Those opposed? That amendment is passed. No. Senator Coe, there is a committee of the whole amendment. Would you like to have that read in at this time?
Well, no, I wouldn't, Mr. Chairman, because I don't like it and it's not mine.
All right, we're back on the bill. Senator Von Vlatren.
No problem, Mr. Chairman. I'm not asking for my amendment to be written in at this time, and I think we know how the good senator from Cody will vote on it. But I do. Back on the bill. Speaking on the bill, when you look at the handout that you were given, you'll notice that three out of the four, which these four account for 80% of the funds, three out of the four were the rebate money that we told them they had. I think it was 3 years. I might be mistaken. 3 years to spend. So that money should be off the table and not even considered. So I don't know where the problem is that this bill is trying to solve, because that's where that money came. The third district, Laramie County School District 1, if you notice that $2 million came from land sales, and I was on the Ed Committee when we were going through
groundskeepers, I think, and there was too many groundskeepers, and these people, Laramie County 1 was way out of proportion on groundskeepers. So they said, why? And they said, well, we have this extra X amount of acres. And they said, well, that's not in the formula. You can't own that much. Sell it. So since it was before 1997, they got to keep the proceeds. That's $2 million of it. $6 million of it from grants from the city of Cheyenne, approved Cheyenne Rec Board projects. That's local money that they voted themselves, if they have a rec mill down there, to keep. That should be off the board. So there's $8 million of it we're talking now. And they've transferred in $22 million from general fund over 10 years. So they've had the incentive. We gave them the incentive. Here's an account you can put money into. And they took 10 years to put approximately $2 million. And I really don't know what their budget is, but I'm thinking it's probably around a couple hundred million a year to run their schools. So they've managed to stick away $2 million, and that's just being responsible. That's operating money. And what they ended up doing was getting a grade school and at least one high school. So they had money to move into these high schools, these new schools, because you get paid a year in arrears on the expenses of operating another school. You get the money the next year after you've already opened it. So this is what this money went for, or a share of that money went for. Apparently not all. They still have $28 million sitting left, but as you can see, about $8 million of it, plus another million, $1.1 million was interest. So about $10 million of their money, of this money here, was locally garnered money and should not be considered as part of the state foundation grant, which is the real fear here, is that people are taking their foundation grant and not educating their children. They're stashing it away and cheating in something. They're cutting back in areas that we have said through the model they should be funding to educate their children. But to give them an incentive to save some money for those unknown catastrophes that may pop up, they need to take care of right then. And most of it, if it's major maintenance, they will get paid back. But nobody pays the bill in that first 30 days to 6 months or to a year, depending on what the catastrophe is. So this is where this money comes into play. So with that, I think the bill is looking for a problem to solve. And I ask for your no vote on it, and we'll talk about further amendments.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, and I have a question directed at the Education Committee and at the Senate generally. You know, we as a legislature are putting aside quite a bit of money in reserves in anticipation of the day when we will not have the resources because the expenses are going to rise faster than our revenues. And it seems to me that in both this education area that this bill deals with, and frankly with the cities and counties, we are doing everything we can to discourage those organizations from putting together reserves for the same purpose. And I really wonder if we shouldn't rethink our policy and start encouraging them to carry some reserves, because we can foresee, as we discussed in the first week down here, we can foresee that we're going to have financial troubles, and if the state has financial troubles, they're going to be shared with the local governments. And this is, school boards are just one of the local governments, so why should we pass this bill? Why shouldn't we do something on the other side and encourage them to carry some reserves?
Senator Rothfuss.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm just going to clarify something, and then I believe my colleague from across the county will come up and say a little bit more on the justification for this. But with the passage of the amendment, a lot of the concerns that we've just talked about have been taken care of. There's a few things the amendment really goes to, and one of which is to allow the districts to preserve the funds that they already have. So all of the funds they have right now, they will continue to have. In fact, it also allows them to maintain or accrue new funds for the concerns of the tall senator from Natrona County. They'll be able to get new funds if they want. What they can't do is take school foundation program account dollars, which are specifically funded through the model, are intended to be spent basically that year to provide education, pay teachers, buy books, do the things that the foundation program account is intended to do. If they save from this year's school foundation program account, that means that they aren't giving full resources to these kids as we lay out through the model. And that is something that as a state we don't want to encourage. So if they want to raise funds locally, if they want to mill, if they want to do anything they want, they can put funds into a special reserve account after the amendment's been applied. But what they can't do is draw off this year's students to do something in the future, because our intent is to fully fund this year's kids with this year's money and not to have a savings program that basically discriminates against the future kids, or excuse me, the current kids for the future ones. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to just talk on and for the bill, but before I make my comments, I'd like to address our colleague from Casper's concern, because I think that's worth addressing. I don't think there's anything in our statutes that discourages cities, towns, and counties from developing reserves. In fact, the only time I could think of that the reserves come into play is when we have finite resources administered for grant programs and communities come down and are competing for the grant dollars, and the SLIB board or other boards, it could be even the any other boards we set up, are interested in knowing what kind of local effort has been made to fund their own projects. And that's more of trying to figure out who's the most needy. But I can't think of any, when you look at our direct distributions, when you look at all the dollars that we appropriate to cities, towns, and counties, I can't think of any provision in our distribution formula that ever discourages them from building reserves. And I think we would compliment them for building reserves when they have. Now, when you begin competing for funds in a finite pool, certainly you have to look at the equities and those things, that type of reserve may become important. With respect to this bill, you know, when we appropriate money for operating funds, and you're going to go through the budget process here and pretty soon, when we appropriate monies to agencies for operating dollars, it's our belief and our understanding and our appropriation that the dollars will be spent for operating as designated. If an agency does not use the money, the dollars revert. When they revert, we use them for next year's funding to reduce our obligation that year. In some instances, the dollars can sweep in our sweep process into the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account, which builds our overall reserve. But fundamentally, the process of budgeting is that we appropriate operating dollars to be used for those purposes. We don't say to the Department of Health, look, if you can save a bunch of money, you can go out and build a building with it. Our expectation is if they have a building they want to build, they'll come through the capital process and build a capital facility. And that's the way the process works. And in fact, it's our understanding and our general belief that employees should not overspend, and if there's money to revert, that they, good employees, faithful employees, will revert as much of the dollars as not expended. And so you hear oftentimes, well, geez, if you tell us that the dollar is going to revert at the end of the year, we're just going to go spend it on things that aren't wise. And that'd be unfortunate if people do that. I mean, my general belief is most employees don't do that. We have a good state employee system, and they understand that they're to marshal or to watch all dollars of taxpayer dollars. So when you translate those same characteristics to a couple areas, if you do it to the University of Wyoming, the community colleges, we give them a block grant, and they're a little bit different. I'll take them out of the discussion. But with respect to K-12, under the School Foundation Program account, we are appropriating through the Foundation Program account operating dollars intended to operate schools. And if the money is not used for the operation, At the end of the year, there's a reconciliation process. They're allowed to keep a certain amount in cash reserves, and the balance then gets charged against their next year draw, which in effect is the way we capture reserves that have been built over time, or reversions, what I should say. And in this instance, when we give them the operating dollars, it's our expectation that that's what it costs to educate children. Now, for those of us that were here from the beginning of Campbell 1, we were always concerned whether or not we had, at that time, the beginning, a model that benefited small districts. Small districts, we believed, were getting more per capita and had an easier time operating their schools. What you have to wonder now, and we have to start thinking about, is what is it about some of these large districts that allows them to generate reserves? Such significant reserves, for example, I think when you look at Cheyenne South, the district paid for all of the enhancements out of a cash account from dollars that were set aside on this $22 million you heard before. So there's an incentive then for the districts to pull back operating dollars, put them in a reserve account so they can go build their enhancements, swimming pools, things like that. And that's not what those operating dollars were appropriated for. We have the discussion about classroom sizes and all kinds of things that would lend itself to generate reserves. But we know it is the larger districts who have the largest capacity to say, well, we're going to have classroom sizes of 20 to 1 instead of 16 to 1. Or we're not going to bus from one school to another when we're overpopulated in one school because, frankly, we can hire fewer teachers this way. If we hire fewer teachers, we can generate a reserve and we can pay for these capital improvements out of our cash account. And that's the type of thing that our budgeting is designed to avoid. Operating dollars appropriated for operating purposes, capital construction, major maintenance, routine maintenance is appropriated for other purposes. And that's a discipline that is required, and if you don't adhere to the discipline, then you're going to get the manipulations that our colleague from Cody described, and that is, all of a sudden, you have to go back and look at the constitutionality. We at one time said that you cannot fund your schools based upon the wealth of your community. Well, it should also be the case that you should not be able to fund your enhancements based upon the size of your district and your capacity to take out operating dollars. Or if you're going to do that, every district should have the same opportunity. The district in Lingle should be able to generate $10 million to go out and build their amenities out of their operating budgets. I urge you to support the bill.
Senator Von Flatron.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that the Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 be read in at this time.
Will the reading clerk read the amendment?
Senate File 63, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1.
Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 to Senate File 63. And what this amendment does is goes into the Senate amendment we just passed and goes to page 2 after line 13 and puts a period after the word reserve fund and then deletes, except for any amounts received by the district from the foundation program account under Wyoming Statutes 2113-309, little p. And what this does is still allow and leave the incentive in place for the districts to be responsible for their money and to possibly save some. And if they save it, they can then put it into this account to hold it until it's needed for expenses, unplanned, unforeseen expenses. And it is true what the senator from Albany County was saying about every district should have the same chance at funding these accounts, having some kind of savings, something to back up in case there's a shortage due to catastrophe, due to poor financial planning, or to the delay in how they get their school foundation money. And every district does. Think about it. We all have a formula that we live by. Pays square footage the same. Pays major maintenance the same. It pays per student the same. Tells you how many teachers you're supposed to have. It goes through the whole thing, every district. And then we carve out small districts because of the economics of the size of them. They still need a principal even though they have 100 students versus having 300 or 400 students. So they get additional funds. So every district has the same chance at building this fund up for those unforeseen events that may happen. And let me remind you, one of those events could be you're growing and you need to put schools in. And if you notice the group that had some money, they're all growing districts that have had new schools, not just replacement schools. And I can tell you replacement schools cost the district money for that first year or so. But they all have new schools on top of that. So it's a good amendment. It allows them to keep putting in money if they save it. If they provide what they need to provide, and at the local level, they're the ones that should decide. And if they're not, it should be an unelected member of that school board or several, and it should trickle all the way up through the superintendent of schools. But that is not for us to decide. This should allow them to be fiduciarily responsible and save a dollar or two. So I ask for your aye vote on this amendment.
Question's been called. All those in favor of Senator Von Flatron's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 63, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Division. All those in favor, please stand.
Yes.
Those opposed? The motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 63 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman. Two comments with regard to the reserves being accumulated. One of the problems, and the fundamental problem, is that the Supreme Court decision that we're all running off speaks to the cost of education, the cost of education. Mr. Chairman, that decision is based on unreality. They're looking at it as if it was the cost of building a bridge, where you can get an engineering estimate and there's a cost. Education isn't of that nature. There are multiple costs, multiple possible costs of education, depending on how much quality and a bunch of other factors. And that is a fundamental problem with our whole system. But that's one of the things. Your school board opts for a little less quality in some area, can accumulate reserves. That's one of the causes that troubles you. The thing, though, Mr. Chairman, about this bill that bothers me more is the explanation that I heard from a member of the Education Committee a moment ago. Mr. Chairman, way back when I used to work for the federal government, and I was involved in budgeting for an agency for a while. And every year, at the end of the fiscal year, there was a scramble to get all the money spent on anything you could find to spend it on, so that it wouldn't be taken away and you wouldn't lose it next year. And I'm afraid with this bill, that's the road we're starting to go down. And I hear, when I go campaigning at home, a fair amount of complaint about waste of school money. And I think they may be responding to this kind of incentive, saying, okay, we're being told to spend it this year. You get the end of the year and you didn't spend as much as you estimated on supplies. You didn't have to have some of the overtime you thought you might have. There's a bunch of different things that you need to budget for, but you may not spend them all. Somebody quits. You have a vacant custodian position for a while. And you got by. You wind up with some extra money. I think we have to be careful not to put an incentive in there. I think we may already have too much of one. But just spend it to get it spent, so that you aren't under attack. And, Mr. Chairman, that's the reservation I have with this bill.
Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. Chairman, unless I misunderstood the last amendment, I don't think that's a problem anymore. I think the last amendment effectively gutted most of the purpose of the bill of precluding school program foundation account money from going into a reserve account. That amendment removed that restriction, which was the purpose of the bill. With that gone, we can say a school district could theoretically save its entire annual budget into a special reserve account, although the next year they couldn't spend more than 10% of that amount. So I don't believe that tall senator from Toronto County's concerns are really anything to worry about at this point if we go on with this bill.
Senator Nicholas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that on the next reading of this bill, we ought to address those concerns and move forward, because if the argument is that these growing districts have excess monies that are built into their system for a variety of reasons. Maybe they have a large classroom sizes, and while they're transitioning to building schools, they have extra money. Seems to me that the answer is that if you're using our foundation program account, you put it into a reserve account. Those reserve accounts have to be at some point used to offset and acquire things that the state is required to provide. And on third reading, or on the second reading, we ought to take a look at that, because I think there could be instances where a large district would accumulate more operating dollars in 1 year because they had a large spike in growth. They've got their classrooms overloaded, not because they want to, because they frankly have to. Their fixed costs stay down for that period of time, and since their fixed costs are down, they develop a reserve. And to carry that over to use towards things the state has an obligation to pay for because it's out of our foundation guarantee, maybe that's appropriate. I think the purpose of this bill to say is that what you shouldn't be doing is accumulating the monies we appropriate for education at the state level and then hoarding the money to enhance your facilities and things to create an opportunity to essentially to lower the burden on your taxpayers by deferring the cost of education or reducing those costs. There should be no corresponding benefit or incentive not to educate. And I think there should be, as our colleague from Casper says, there should also be no encouragement to spend money that's not usefully spent. We need to find a compromise in those positions as we move this bill through.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think what we saw in appropriations was not so much an abuse of the block grant for the basic grant for education, but really perhaps the add-ons that we've added on to enhance education over above the base formula. And so I think that's really where we need to concentrate. And I think that from my perspective is that you put goals in there that if you put money out for, say, classroom facilitators and they don't hire any classroom facilitators, that perhaps the money doesn't go to that district because they haven't spent it specifically in those areas that's really above the baseline of the block grant. And in other areas where we've had our additions. And I think it's somewhere around $100 million that's above that. And I think that's where a lot of these reserves are accumulating. It's not so much the basic education opportunity to every child, but our enhanced educational opportunities. And I think that's where we need to maybe concentrate and put some parameters in there that say, you can implement this in a staggered form, but if you don't meet that goal, we're going to reduce that amount in that category proportionately. And that's maybe an idea that we might look at or and see, because I think that's really where the problem that we saw in appropriations is, was that the school districts were spending the block grant fine, but it was enhancements that maybe there were some differences in.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you. Chairman, well, I guess, you know, the reason I'm concerned with this bill and for what it's doing, I guess, is the fact that, you know, we've, and this has kind of been said maybe before a little bit, but I'll kind of reiterate it, that, you know, we've encouraged these districts to be, you know, financially prudent, to, you know, be efficient, and to be responsible in how they spend the money that we allocate to them or appropriate to them in a block grant system, for example. And it seems like they work very hard at that out there. All the local districts work very hard at that, and they are prudent. Matter of fact, many of them have to be pretty prudent because of their costs to provide that basket of services that the, as we, many of us know, that the Supreme Court has told us to provide for our schools. And the fact of the matter is, though, we tell them these things, be prudent, be efficient, be responsible with this money that we're sending to you, to your local school districts. They do the very best they can, and then we move the goalpost on them. And I don't like that idea. I mean, we tell them, we give them one message, and then we move the goalpost. And I have a problem with that, in doing that, and how we operate with that. Thank you.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm having some trouble following this. And if the larger school district, just follow this scenario and explain to me where I'm wrong. You know, larger school district, you have a lot more students, obviously, so you can have larger classroom sizes. Your costs go down in terms of your teachers and your support, so you build funds up so you can take those funds and have, and when you build a new school, you have extra money that the other districts don't have. To me, that's what this is all about, and I think that's what's going on, or you wouldn't see $100 million in funds out there that's available for it. And I remember the Cheyenne South situation where when I saw the number that was available out of their reserve accounts to help that school, I was blown away by that total. It's not a matter of saving. I think the saving incentive is there, but the way they do it is what I have a problem with. Why should we allow them to do that, increase the classroom sizes, thereby they have a kind of a windfall, and then they put the money in reserve account, and when they do their capital projects, they have more money to spend that the other districts don't. And if that's the case, then I think this is a good bill, and I think that's what we're trying to get to here. I support the bill.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, in defense of Laramie County School District number one, I've submitted to you and have put out on your desk a good response to Laramie County School District number one's and how they've utilized their monies, and I think quite prudently. Now, part of the problem that you got is these larger school districts are the ones that are really growing. And you have a functional disconnect between what's going on when we don't have the schools to meet the 16-to-1 or so forth to expend those monies. And so, I mean, we're just blowing out the door with, the class sizes are high. They would like to get to, they're trying to get to the 16-to-1, but they can't. And the schools aren't being built. And then what happens is when they save this money, they save it in anticipation of those expenses. And you can see it on the first page that are accrued, that are not paid for. They're not included. So I guess I have a real problem with this is an attack on the larger school districts. They're being good with their money, and when they do, now they're getting criticized for it, and we want to take it away from them. But the reality is there's a pent up need. We still don't have Prairie Wind School out there. Davis School has been on the list for years, not there. We got people in modulars and all kinds of stuff like that trying to accommodate them. And so when they plan for the future, now they get dinged because somehow they're being somehow not frugal with their money. But in fact, that's exactly what they're doing. In anticipation of growth and the need that's happening. Because it's happening right here in Cheyenne right now. So I urge you to take a look at this. They make a very, very copious and plausible explanation for their money.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do want to recognize our Chairman of Education. He certainly brings a lot to the table, and I understand where this bill is trying to get to, I think. But I still think it's as bad a bill as I thought it was. Here's the concern I have. We got down here with this bill, and I frankly haven't had time to talk to very many districts out there. I'm not exactly sure what the situation is. I come from a district that doesn't use these funds. We don't have any reserve funds in the district that I represent. But the problem that I'm having is, do we really want to put a situation in place where they're never going to have that opportunity either? And to the good senator from Albany County, whether we like it or not, there's going to be an incentive there that my good friend behind me points to, and that is you get to the end of the year. If I can't put that away for some good reason in that district, and I have to send it back to Cheyenne, you're not going to get all of it. There's going to be an incentive to spend that money. And, whether you like it or not, that's human nature, and that's public agency management. I understand that we've got to get to this equity issue, but I'm just not sure that this one's quite ready. I'd like to know a little bit more about these special funds. I'd like to know a little bit more about, my good friend from Gillette pointed out that a lot of those funds are left over. We just, in testimony, just did not get enough to prove to me that there's all this kind of abuse going on out there. And we talk about local control. We talk about allowing those districts to do what they need to do. I just haven't seen it, folks. And that's why I'm just not quite there on this bill.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The beautiful part about Campbell 1 through 4, the beauty of that entire program is that we all get treated alike. And the beauty of that decision is that if I want to come down and say, look, it's too hard for districts to pay for their enhancements and we all should get together and make sure everybody enhancements, we're all in the same boat. The reason it didn't work under the old system is you come down and say, look, these are problems that I have. They're unique problems. But some of the districts simply didn't have that. They had assessed valuations. They had a variety of reasons where they had lots of money, and they could say, we're going to save money. And I came down here to save money. And as long as my district's getting enough money, that's all I care. And your district, I could care less about them. Your folks have never voted for me and won't vote for me. And as you begin to make these decisions, I submit to you, is you have to adhere to that principle. And when I read my colleague from Laramie County's list of problems on this sheet, every district in the state will have those problems when you confronted in those situations. And if you say, look, you get to solve your system by gaming the system, then when you need to have a problem solved, you come down and you can't get any help because we don't share that problem. You can't game the system here because your district's not big enough. Well, that's too bad. You should have a bigger district. And, folks, when you start looking at all your decisions on this school finance, the bottom line is that everybody should be treated alike. And everybody that has the same problems should have the same ability to solve them. If we have to go to a bond issue to solve them, then you should have to go to a bond issue, and you should have to go to the bond issue. And that equity is so important that once you lose it, the whole beauty of the Campbell County lawsuit is lost. We come down here shoulder to shoulder with the same problems, and we find solutions to problems for everybody. And we don't create incentives for some people to game the system and solve their problems and leave everybody else in the dust.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would agree with my good colleague from Albany County, but that would mean that the Supreme Court had been consistent in its opinions. And quite frankly, they haven't. The last Campbell decision turned the whole thing upside down. The last Campbell decision said that local resources can be used for enhancements. So, you know, when I read that decision, I'm going, really? I mean, we're trying to make everything equitable throughout the state, and I've been here through all of those decisions. And then the last decision comes out and says they can use those local resources for enhancements. They're not consistent. So it's laudable to say, well, the Campbell decisions are all that great, but they're not.
Senator Coe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just for the benefit of some of those on the floor that might not really understand rebated recapture, I'm going to try to hit on it if I can one more time. Rebated recapture goes into those districts that have large assessed valuations. They have a block grant guarantee. I believe, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, they get to keep 109% of that local assessed valuation through their local taxing. That's where rebated recapture comes. So a Campbell one or a sublet one can keep 109% of what their block grant guarantee is. So the rebated recapture, I think, is, you know, that provision's probably fine. But I want to remind everybody one thing. This is talks about a special reserve account. There's another reserve account out there that districts are allowed to maintain, and that goes up to 15% of the local block grant. I think I'm right on that. I might be off, but I think I'm right. Now, if you want to see what they're doing with enhancements, it's $22 million. Enhancement and maintenance, go to page 9 of this handout. Did I agree with enhancements when it came through Campbell 2, I believe? I did not agree with that. You know, in Campbell 2, they said building schools would no longer be a function of local wealth, be a function of state wealth. So we started building schools. And guess what? $1.4 billion later, we built $1.4 billion worth of schools out there that used to be funded with a local bond issue. And then in that decision, I think they contradict themselves and say, oh, but you can enhance. Well, a Campbell 1 can enhance a little better than a Niobrara 1. But I don't think there was ever any intention of these wealthier school districts to be able to go in and take monies out of their operating funds and pay for enhancements. So we need to have a discussion. This is a serious issue. I really think it's serious, and it's, did I agree with the Campbell decisions? God, no. I was here in 1995 when they started, and boy, it was just a blow to the side of the head when they threw out the classroom unit formula and we started doing things differently. It was just a blow to the head to me because I thought we had a pretty good system. So then we tried to address school CapCon. I chaired the first school CapCon committee with then a representative down the hall from Shoshone. And we did a great job. We did such a great job, the Supreme Court found our plan unconstitutional, but that's the way it goes. But I want to say that this is a serious issue because it is about equity. It is about equal opportunity for all the kids in the state. And we've developed this prototypical funding model that the Supreme Court said we would develop. We started with a MAP model. We all went through that walk. Then in 05, we decided to recalibrate and build a model that was transparent. So we did all that stuff. So you can see the moving parts in it. But I guess the bottom line is I think that we ought to move this bill forward, continue this discussion. I think it's relevant to the future of the discussion on school finance, and I'd ask that you support the bill.
Question's been called. All those in favor of Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises and report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 63, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 63 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The division's been called. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed? Pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5, having failed the standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll call.
Anderson, District 2?
Aye.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquivel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Ross?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 13 ayes, 17 noes.
Senate File 63, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5, is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 101. Will the reading clerk read the bill in?
Senate File 101, Child Abuse Reporting Penalties, sponsored by Senator Nutting, an act relating to children. It was referred to Committee Number 1 Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Esquivel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
There is a standing committee amendment. Could we have that read in at this time? Senator Von Flatten.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's one motion on the floor, and if the sponsor of the standing committee wants a second amendment motion on the floor, that would be their prerogative.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, I move that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 101, Child Abuse Reporting Penalties. Mr. Chairman, as I understand, we have read in the Standing Committee amendment. I'll ask you to read it in at this point.
Senate File 101, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Mr. Chairman, I will also move the Standing Committee Amendment, and I will yield the floor to Senator Nutting, the prime sponsor, and we'll work together to make sure that we cover both the bill and the amendment. We'll work the bill first and then work the Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Nutting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 101 imposes penalties for those who fail to report child abuse. This bill comes about as an incidental omission that was done several years ago when, at that time, the adult abuse and the child abuse statutes were together in one statute. And this body split them so that the child remained in one part of the statutes and the adult went to the other. by accident and omission, the penalties for not reporting went with the adult and were omitted from the child. So this puts a penalty for failing to report child abuse back into the statute. And that penalty is that any person who knowingly fails to make a report required by this subsection is guilty of a misdemeanor punishable by imprisonment for not more than 1 year, a fine of not more than $1,000, or both. So that's the bill. I'd like to go ahead and discuss the amendment at this time, if that's right, Mr. Chairman.
Can we have the reading clerk read into the amendment? Oh. Would you like to make a motion to move that amendment, Senator? It's been moved. All right.
The amendment recognizes that not the entire population would find this to be a burden, to have a penalty for failing to report child abuse, because not all of the population has a background to help them recognize and identify abuse. So what the amendment does is to identify mandated reporters. Now, it still is true that anyone can report child abuse, but the amendment says there are mandated reporters who must report child abuse. And those mandated reporters are peace officers or law enforcement officers, anyone acting in a capacity in pre-elementary, elementary, secondary, or post-secondary education, medical or health-related services, including mental health services, those who provide legal services, clergy, child protective or other social services, so that it's recognized that there are certain members of our population who, by way of training, education, or through learned skills from their job, have an added burden to report child abuse. So I stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Are you ready for the question? Senator Dockstader.
Mr. Chairman, I'd request a division on the amendment. Mr. Chairman, I request that Division 1 on the amendment go through line 41, separate out line 42, that would be Division 2, then Division 1 continue on 43 on page 1, and then 1 through 3 on page 2.
Would you like to just speak to Division 1, Senator Dockstader?
Mr. Chairman, I need your permission.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, did you rule that that was divisible in the manner he has asked for?
Senator Bob Plantron, I do rule that that is divisible.
Okay, then I would object to the division.
Objection noted. Would you like a ruling on your objection?
No. Mr. Chairman, may I?
Noted and dismissed, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I would may I explain my objection?
Senator Von Flatring, you may explain your objection.
Thank you, sir. If Division 1 fails, or Division 1 fails and Division 2 passes, can it stand on its own? Just the word clergy.
Ruling from the chair is that it can. Any other discussion on the ruling?
Mr. Chairman, may I proceed?
Senator Dockstader, would you please proceed?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I asked perhaps to have this pastor pass on this letter to most of you because it was well written, well researched, and covered his points well. And I I acknowledge the good work that's gone into this bill and the sponsor, and this is a very serious matter. Let me bring it to a point, though. He's speaking essentially for those who serve pastorally in the churches of Wyoming. And here are the four points of his concern, members of the Senate. If you leave the clergy in, this will cause increased intrusion of the state into both the family and the church. Number two, the chilling effect this will have on the clergy and the congregant on the openness of communication and care within their individual congregations. Number three, the vagueness on the limits set by this bill. And number four, that it will inadvertently create a more secretive society. Those are good summaries, Mr. Chairman. So looking at what we're asking for in this separation, this division, and in summary, this could have a chilling effect on Wyoming's parishioners when they come to their pastor to seek counsel, when perhaps they have no intention of seeking a remedy in the courts, if they fear that it will automatically land them in investigations or court proceedings, they will be less inclined to come and seek help. Mr. Chairman, I would ask that division be approved. We remove clergy from the amendment.
Senator Von Flatgren.
Not that I want to really confuse the situation here, but a point of order. And Mr. Chairman, are we speaking on Division 1 or 2? And I won't go into why 2 can't stand alone, but I just want to know what the person making the motion, which division we're speaking to, and then make your motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dockstetter, could we have a restatement of what the division is?
The division, again, would be Division 2, removing clergy from this amendment. And I make the motion that we do that.
Yeah, you have Division 2, lines 42.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, what we've got here, we've got a division, we've got a ruling that the division...
Go ahead, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, what I think we've got done, and we'll make sure, we've got an amendment. A division was asked for, and it was ruled that it was a legitimate division. Division 1 is lines 1 through 41 and lines 43 through line 3 on the second page. That's Division 1. We take up Division 1 first. So the discussion is on that portion of the amendment. Then we'll vote on Division 1. When we get done with that, then we take up Division 2, and we get to talk and mill around and mash that around, and then we'll vote on it. I think it's the way we got to go. And I think we're on Division 1. Now, since I got the mic, Division 1 is, I think, it's done a very good thing. What it does... And I commend the author of the bill. We worked hard on this. It says if you're in this category of employment, you got a special obligation to watch out for abuse. And if you see something bad going, you got to report it. And if you don't report it, you're going to be subject to some penalties. These are professionals. They are the people that they're kind of the frontline people protecting kids. And I urge you to vote in favor of Division 1.
All those in favor? Senator Perkins.
Before we vote on Division 1, I do have a question for not the sponsor of the division, but the sponsor of the amendment. And as we look at that, as I look at lines, Mr. Chairman, as I look at lines 23 through 28, if I understand it right, and I just want confirmation if I'm reading the amendment right, is the mandated reporter is only for those individuals that are listed below. And these individuals would be acting within their scope of their duties as an employee of the state, its political subdivision, or local government. And the person is then one of these following. I just want to, I just wonder if that's really the, Is that, if I understand that right, I'm just understanding is what we're really doing is only making mandated reporters. You would have to be an employee and acting within the scope of an employee of the state, political subdivision, or local government, and then be in that position. So if you were a, for example, if you were a federal peace officer, then this wouldn't apply to you. Or if, and then also if you look down below a health-related services, if you were just, you know, in our town, we've got a private hospital, and so if we have a nurse in that private hospital, then that person would be exempted from this requirement. I just wanted to, if the sponsor would verify that I'm understanding that right or correct me, I'd appreciate it.
Senator Nutting.
Mr. Chairman, I thank the senator from that number one numbered county for attentiveness to this matter, and he is correct in that section is not worded quite correctly. On line 27, and the person, it should say, or the person. And so at the next reading, that amendment can be put in to change that and to an or.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I thought the wording was immaculate, just the way it was. What we're saying, if you're acting in an official capacity, you have to do your job. And part of your job is that you're a mandated reporter. It is those people that we turn to, whether it's law enforcement. I think it's good, the group of people they go to. But if you're acting in an official capacity and you see this abuse, you have to report it, and if you don't report it, you can be punished. And we can talk about another amendment on another day, but understand exactly what this amendment does.
Senator Anderson, too.
I spent almost 30 years, in excess of 30 years, in a profession that had a legal obligation to report such incidents. I never had a class, I never had any training, I never had any formal training in regard to what I was looking for. But I think anybody with compassion and has any sense of awareness of what goes on will recognize certain signs and indications when you see it. Now, I did on occasion, a number of, I can't recall, but more than I like, did have to report such incidents. And I won't say that every time I reported one that it was justified, but it was investigated, verified one way or the other. But number one, I had met my obligation. But number two, I think even though I may not have been as good at that observation as I should have been, I always had it in my mind that it was my obligation, if I were to err on the side of good judgment. In the event that I did err, there was no penalty to me. But if I'd have missed it and went the other way, there certainly would have been a penalty to the child. So all I can say is I think morally we have some obligation to do this. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, right now, for instance,
nonprofit sector. Rather, nonprofit corporations largely funded with public funds. But if they aren't public employees, many of those preschools are strictly private. We have several church-based private schools in our community. They're exempt from this as written. I don't think that's the intention. Mr. Chairman, I think this amendment is going to be extensive work. And whether, Mr. Chairman, we ought to do it on second reading, whether we ought to lay this bill back a day, and do it as a committee of the whole, I'm not sure. But I think we need to do one of those two, because I think this confusion with the amendment.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and I agree with my colleague from Natrona County. If you were going to add the word or on line 27, it would be very confusing. But that's not what this amendment says. It says and let me say, there's two components. When you're what is known as a mandated reporter, there's two criteria for that. Somehow you got to be employed by the state or a subdivision of the state, and you have to be one of these designated police officer, teacher, and so on and so forth. I think it is a good amendment. We've all read about instances where people that work for a political subdivision of another state did not report this, and it's been devastating. What we're saying is we don't want that to happen in our state. And we don't care whether it's a school or a university or wherever it is, that we're not going to tolerate that. And understand that with the word and in there, that's exactly what it does. Got to qualify on both counts. The state or a political subdivision of the state, and be in those specific categories of employees.
Senator Von Flattern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, if I understand this truly, the acting to provide legal services, would only amount to our LSO staff, attorney general staff, city attorney, county prosecutor, or county attorney. That's all that would be covered. Your average attorney, and we have all above average attorneys in here, of course, but would not be covered by this bill. Is that what I understand it?
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I am not sure whether this pertains to Division I or Division II, but let me go ahead and you can decide. I have a person in my constituency who is involved in post-secondary education. He also is a part-time minister, and he has a congregation. I don't think this person has a ministerial degree or has been commissioned by any church to be a minister, but he still has a congregation, and he calls himself a pastor. I know several other people in my community who are involved in education in different churches where they would be considered in that church a minister. They have a congregation that they oversee. They're considered a minister. They're not ordained, but they're called by that church to be technically a minister. And so I don't know how we're going to get around this. I would like some information or get some background on that.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, you know, folks, I'd urge you to be very careful of what you're doing here. I'm admitted in practice in three different states. One of the states I'm admitted practice on is Oregon. In Oregon, attorneys are mandated reporters, and as are teachers and about everybody else that exists. Now, they don't have this double the and that you're referring to. This is that you have to learn it in your scope of practice. But let's take the situation of a police officer. And this would be true for if you're in Oregon, you're an attorney, so you're an attorney or in Oregon, and this is where we're starting to march down this road. But you're a police officer. For the most part, as a police officer, you never go off duty. You're always a police officer. And then the fact pattern is that we use in the Oregon State Bar is the situation where you see your neighbor and the 17-year-old son comes over, he's a strapping kid, and says that he got in a fight with his dad the other night before, and the dad whacked him one and hit him on the chin or something like that. If you're a police officer now and you're a neighbor and you hear that, you've got to report those. And I know that that in many states that seems to be the way we're going, but I'll tell you, there's a big difference. You know, I know most of my neighbors. I know everybody within a block around, and I think we all know each other. And we keep an eye on each other. I think that's not the case in Oregon. I mean, you can live in Oregon, you wouldn't even know your next-door neighbor. You wouldn't know anybody in the whole building. And I can see where they have needs and problems that would force them to require this mandated reporting on everybody. So everybody becomes a tattletale on everybody. And some of the things that you see these events, that's okay. We're going to report every event. But this is a serious step when we begin to expand the mandated reporting and simply say, okay, with your state employee, the rules are different for you. Why should they be different for state employees than anyone else? You're a lawyer, if you're a doctor, you run a business, you're a rancher, and you see the neighbor kids out, the old man next door getting upset during haying and bust the kid's chop, you're going to better run down and report them right then. And if you think that those, I think we know the difference between what is abuse and temporary events, but when you start mandating reporting, it doesn't make those distinctions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
I'll try and respond to the concerns. In terms of the concerns from my colleague from Winona County, the instances you described, I think, will be addressed with the division of this amendment, I think. Although I don't think you people have a problem anyway, unless they're employed by the state as ministers. But it's a divided amendment, and it'll take care of it, I think. In terms of the Oregon example, and I always wake up every morning saying, how are things in Oregon? You know, that's a great concern to me. And sometimes I even call out there and say, how are they going? And, you know, but that's just my own personal quirk. Quite frankly, we all know the problem that we're trying to address here. And we know it can happen. And when it's happening, and it happened to a state back east, it's devastating. That's serious stuff. And it went on and went on and went on. And that was a person of authority that should have known better. And you talk about victims, it is victims. In terms of the question about lawyers, understand we've got some state lawyers, some employees of the state or political subdivisions that deal particularly with juveniles, representing them, prosecuting cases, people that act on behalf of juveniles in the state system. We also have a division of victim services that deals with these kind of things, and there's a lot of people involved, and these are face-to-face discussions and things like that. It isn't just the AG sitting downstairs, and we've got a lot of people out there dealing with these problems. And if there is a problem, for goodness sake, what this tries to do is say, let's at least look at it. If it's unfounded, we keep going. But if there's substance there, we want to put a halt to it. Not substance, but if somebody's abusing somebody, we want to put a stop to it. We will not tolerate what happened in that other state where it went on for years and years and years. And that's what this is trying to get at. Make no mistake. I urge your support for the amendment.
Question. Senator Dockstader.
So in summary, as I think we're going to wrap it up here, to successfully eliminate the word clergy from this, seek a yes on Division 1, it eliminates it, and then a no on Division 2, then we successfully protect our clergy.
Hearing no more other discussion, we're going to be voting on Division 1. Division 1 is lines 1 through 41, picks back up at 43 through the entirety of page 2. All those in favor of Senator Dockstader's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Division 1, Standing Committee 1, First Division, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion to adopt Standing Committee Division 1 has passed. We're back on Division 2. Division, it's been called. All those in favor of Standing Committee 1, Division 1, please stand. Those opposed? The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division Number 1, has passed. We're back on the amendment on Division 2. Senator Dockstader.
Again, I would ask, as I summarized a moment ago, a no vote on Division 2 to successfully eliminate the word clergy from the amendment.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to speak against that Division Number 2 amendment. This clearly states that this is an employee of the state, its political subdivisions, local government, and the person is clergy. So that means that clergy works for the state or the county or the city or some subdivision of it. That does not mean every clergy in the state, as I've received the information from clergy in the state. Given the history of the clergy in Wyoming and other places, I think they have some a level of responsibility to report some of these things, and I don't want to let them out of that responsibility.
Senator Perkins.
On and against Division 2, and the reason I think it's important to do that is, well, I understand my good friend from fellow senator from Natrona County, in our church as well as in a number of other churches, there are lay individuals who serve. And my concern is that as the senator from Albany County said just a minute ago, you have someone, a peace officer is a great example, who's always a peace officer. And so if you have a governmental employee who's serving as lay clergy in his church, you know, it seems to me you just muddy the water all that more. It's already going to be a difficult enough decision to determine whether a lay clergyman who also is an employee of some governmental entity is now going to be bound by that or not. And I think that's, since we're only talking about, since there's this combination that requires both of these, I think it would be helpful for those individuals who serve in clergy, in lay clergy positions, to be able to have this amended. I do think it would be very helpful in that regard.
Question. For the Senator Dockstader, for the clarification for the chair, could you go over one more time what an affirmative, a yea vote versus a nay vote on Division 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, to completely eliminate any confusion that was just noted.
Mine's on.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. There we go. To avoid any confusion, I think it'd be better for the body to just proceed and completely remove the word clergy, because I think there would be more confusion out there if it was left in. So I am asking for a no vote on Division 2.
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Dockstader's motion to adopt Standing Committee Division Number 2 on Senate File 101, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Division 2, has failed. We're back on the bill. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm sorry to belabor. I know people want to get rid of this, move on. But I'm trying to get a feel for exactly what this bill does now. And I think it goes to what my good friend from Albany County said a few minutes ago. I happen to have for my day job a position under which I'm really never off duty. Whenever I'm around some function, it's almost like a 24-hour thing. So if I read this correctly, acting within the scope of their duties as an employee of the state, if it's late at night, if it's somewhere where I glance at something and don't report it, I'm just wondering from my legal friends where I stand. At what point am I acting within the scope of those duties, and at what point am I not? And I think a lot of state employees would probably ask you the same question. At what point are you on, and at what point are you off?
Senator Nutting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, 100% of the population are expected to be reporters, and only some are mandated reporters. So that I think the senator who brings this question up would be the first person, just because of knowing his moral character, he would be the first person to report a child that he saw being abused. And that really is the purpose of this, is to get abuse of children reported. I'd like to bring out again that the person that they must report to can be the Child Protective Agency or the local law enforcement agency. If this senator, while he was in a more relaxed function of his job, thinks that he might have seen some child abuse, he isn't sure, he can take it to the Child Protective Agency, and most of the claims, they actually settle right then, because many of them are frivolous, and they can reassure the person that that really doesn't sound like child abuse. But you've had the benefit of having another person look at this and help you help you make this determination about whether this egregious of all crimes, that is hurting a child, has indeed occurred. Again, the Department of Department of Family Services here, sometimes they'll say, well, this doesn't sound serious, but we'll just continue monitoring it. A lot of them, they can say, that really does not meet our criteria for child abuse. But Senator, you've had the reinforcement of knowing that you didn't allow a child to be injured without getting another opinion. And often that's all that the reporting amounts to, is that another opinion has been sought. I think as a government, one of our most serious responsibilities is protecting the innocent among our population. And when there is uncertainty, the step should be to get that opinion of another agency about whether that seems like it was indeed child abuse.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. I realize it's first reading, but I also recognize that I think the sponsor made a final statement, and I apologize for stepping up. I'm just going to make a quick statement on behalf of the victims. Been there, done that. And not until I was old enough and big enough to defend myself did it stop. For the record, it wasn't a parent, it's another family member, but it went on and on and on. And I just wish, oh, and by the way, if you're tough, you don't tell. And I just wish that there had been someone that would have recognized. Probably wouldn't have been made much different today, but it might make a difference in a lot of lives of young people. I urge your support.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 101, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 101 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill up. You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Reading Kirk will read the Committee of the Whole. Nope, that's the President. Mr. President. So moved. Hey, he's moving.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 16, do pass. Senate File 61, do pass. Senate File 72, do pass. Senate File 125, do pass. Senate File 89, do pass, amended. Senate File 63 failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. And Senate File 101 do pass amended. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I move for adopting the Committee of the Whole report.
You all heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's been adopted, and the report is adopted.
Survived.
We have reports from standing committees.
January the 23rd, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 122, Expansion of Medicare, reports back with a recommendation that it do not pass with the following amendments. I, Senator Anderson, 28, Senators Nutting, Peterson, and Scott, no, Senator Kraft, Senator Scott, Chairman. January the 23rd, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 136, Seismic Exploration 3, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Senators Hines and Rothfuss, no, Senator Cole and Cooper, Senator Hines, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, Senate File 122, Expansion of Medicaid, which was just read in, actually read in with a do-not-pass recommendation, has an appropriation, and as per the Senate rules, I ask it be re-referred to Committee Number 2.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Without objection, Senate File 122 will be re-referred to Appropriations.
Mr. President.
Senator Scott.
May I have the privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Mr. President, that was a little bit unusual, but when you look in the rules of the Senate, a bill that comes out of committee with a do-not-pass recommendation before the 20th day can be put in the general file and heard right along with the other bills. After the 20th day, it goes to the bottom of the pile and comes up only when everything else is taken care of. So a bill like that has the possibility of coming to the floor, and therefore, since it has an appropriation, it does need to go through the Appropriations Committee and go through that process as per our rules.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Where's the Majority Floor Leader? Oh, there it is. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. Senator Nicholas Driscoll.
You know, as the week goes on, I want you guys to keep track of him, and then if there's a problem, report him. Every kind of problem. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow.
9?
No, 10 a.m., excuse me. Don't get alarmed.
Reported.
10 a.m. tomorrow, which would be Thursday, January 24th.
Announcements? Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet tomorrow night upon adjournment. We'll take up Senate File 112, raw milk, Senate File 133, livestock inspectors' search warrants, Senate File 143, cruelty to animals, Senate File 150, salvage water.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I have an amended announcement for our committee meeting tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., up in Senate Room 14, Tribal Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. We will continue discussion on Senate File 114, Assault of Healthcare Providers, Senate File 149, Complementary Hunting Licenses, and...
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet at after the hour, about 13 minutes from now, in Room S14, to consider Senate File 140, Out-of-State Workers' Vehicle Registration, and Senate File 110, Registration Fees, Trailers with Living Quarters.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. My previous announcement, of course, I just want to remind everybody that start time on Committee Number 7, Corporations, is 7:30 in the morning. Usual time at this 7:30, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a heads up for a member of the Senate that this re-referral, Senate File 122, expansion of Medicaid, we will hear that bill on Friday. There will be a formal notice going out tomorrow, but just a heads up, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a revised announcement from the previous. We've added a Senate file that we will hear tomorrow, Thursday, January 4th. Renew, this is your committee number 3, Mr. President. 30 minutes after the noon recess, we will pick up Senate File 150, Citizen Service Mill Levy Continuation.
Other announcements? Heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Thursday, January 24th.